You're listening to The Point. We are talking about the salmon fisheries in Bristol Bay and a copper mine that's been proposed for the headwaters of two of the most productive salmon runs in Alaska. Brett, copper mines are generally open pit mines. So what can you tell us about the size and scope of this proposed mine?
Pebble Mine is a proposed open pit gold, copper, and molybdenum mine with mineral deposits worth upwards of $500 billion. It'll be North America's largest open-pit mine, roughly 2 by 6 miles wide, and it will be proposed as one of the only visible man-made structures from space. So, in one word, it's huge, massive. It's so big that it's just difficult to even imagine that a mine can be bigger, 2 to 3 times as big as the Kennecott Golden Copper Mine. This is a massive structure that's proposed in an area with, as we've been describing throughout this program, very limited population, and so it's just so hard to describe to people when they can't really see it and know the area of which we're describing, which is why the film Red Gold has been so instrumental in us to help illustrate what's really at stake in the region.
Right. And we should say in the film, the film does talk to the folks from, is it Northern Industries? Is that the name of the company?
Northern Dynasty.
So let's bring up a couple of points. The CEO there says open pit mines. He says problems are the exception, not the rule. They seem to think that the salmon and the environment could coexist with this mine. So tell us what the concerns are. What are the potential impacts that you see to the salmon?
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to get into a little bit of the nitty-gritty details on how the mine is permitted. And basically, there are 67 permits that the proposed Pebble Mine needs to move forward. 66 of those permits are state-level permits because the mine is proposed in state lands, and there's state claims that were sold to Northern Dynasty. One permit is a federal dredge and fill permit issued by the Army Corps of Engineers. And the concern has been for all these stakeholders who, as we also discussed, and in a lot of other regions, generally don't get along, and we're talking commercial fishermen, sport fishermen, environmentalists, native corporations, looking at a provision within the Clean Water Act and requesting in 2009 and 2010 for the United States Environmental Protection Agency to issue a 404C, which vetoes or restricts the one federal permit the Pebble Mine needs to move forward. And so the EPA responded to those requests by conducting 2 draft watershed assessments. So basically 2 very intense scientific analysis of the impacts of different large-scale mining scenarios in the Bristol Bay watershed, and ultimately concluded, or is going to conclude soon when issuing its final one, but within the draft assessment said that large-scale mining such as the size of the proposed Pebble Mine, would devastate up to 90 miles of salmon streams where they spawn, 4,200 acres of important wetlands, and would need to store 10 billion tons. That's enough for every man, woman, and child on this planet to put over, 1,500 pounds of toxic tailings stored next to the mining site in tailings dams stored in perpetuity. So among the many long list of concerns is a tailings dam that is storing 10 billion tons of basically what will be battery acid next to the headwaters of the world's most prolific and productive salmon fishery.
Yeah. And there are some people, perhaps a minority, who support the mine because they believe the area could benefit from jobs and the wages that the mine will bring. So this is an area where people often struggle economically and miners can make good money. And I found it really interesting in the film because you have both sides of that. You have people who say, well, we need the jobs, and other people saying, well, why do we want to take a chance
right.
on ruining this environment? But I want to go back. There was a fisherman, Ali Olson, I think his name was. And I thought it was fascinating when he talked about, they talked about, you know, the low wages a lot of the make, but he said, you know, we feel like millionaires. And it was, he really spoke to the lifestyle. And he said, you know, it isn't all about money to us. It's about a way of life. And, you know, of course, he's on the side that he doesn't want to jeopardize that way of life.
Right.
But I found that interesting that, you know, it was like, I thought that comment, we feel like millionaires. We're the millionaires because we get to live here.
We are. I love that. I love that quote, too. It's one of my favorite. And it's a very sentimental part in the film. I mean, you really get to the heart of, you know, what's at stake here. And, you know, it is a jobs versus, you know, we shouldn't be trading one natural resource for another. There are 14,000 jobs, American hardworking jobs that are dependent on the Bristol Bay fishery. And Pebble Mine would provide up to 1,000.
Mm.
But more importantly, it's what those jobs mean to us as fishermen there. And I think his quote, you know, is something along the lines of, if you're a broke fisherman and can see the beauty in everything, then you've got a wonderful life.
Mm-hmm.
And I truly believe that. And it's a lifestyle that provides unique opportunities to provide for yourself and your family while being out in the elements. Mm-hmm. And right now, the salmon fisheries have almost never been stronger in the state of Alaska. We got paid the highest price for sockeye salmon last summer than we have in decades.
Hmm.
And we have enormous runs returning back to Bristol Bay. And so we don't, you know, we're doing just fine there. We are not struggling. We have an extremely strong fishery, and we're not willing to risk it for a short-term gold and copper mine managed by two foreign companies. We're just not going to risk it. Sometimes you just have to say no.
You know, one of the things that I thought was interesting, who knew, I mean, they're talking about it being one of the richest copper and gold mines in the country. I mean, it was what they were talking about.
That's
like
true.
Five. Yeah. I mean, who knew? I mean, this has been sitting under you for all these years, and nobody knew it was there.
Right. I mean, there is a lot of gold and copper in that region, and it's at very low mineral grades, so you need to basically essentially dig up a lot of tundra and wetlands in order to abstract the gold and copper and minerals to use. And it's not just Pebble Mine that is of concern. Pebble is the biggest in the area. But there are dozens of mining claims, much, much smaller around the region. And once you allow the big boys to play, then everybody else can join in.
Well,
that's going to be a real big concern.
Yeah. Sarah, we were talking about that before we went on the air, the fact that there's, you know, been this effort to stop Pebble Mine, but there's going to be somebody behind. If this doesn't work for this group, there'll be somebody else coming in behind them, won't there?
Right. So that's why it's so important to secure legal protection for the watershed of Bristol Bay. And maybe Brett could speak more to that.
Well, so the importance of providing protections is basically we've been fighting this fight for over a decade, and we're really tired of it. We need to be focusing on what we have now and these strong salmon runs. And so the requests for a EPA restriction under the Clean Water Act for a 404C are basically coming down to the wire. Over 1 million comments were submitted between the two draft watershed assessments and a set of peer reviews. And literally any day now, we expect the final watershed assessment to come out, and that'll give us the final analysis to tell all the stakeholders, by looking at all the analyses that have gone on from both sides, whether large-scale mining, such as the proposed Pebble Mine, can coexist with the salmon industries. And thus far, all evidence has pointed to no.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned before, fishermen are typically seen as individualists, yet you've been able to mobilize broad support, not only from the fishing community, but others against this mine proposal. So why do you see this as an issue for fishermen nationally?
I think, you know, I'll speak a little bit about what I've done, and then I think Sarah, you know, being a fisherman there on the East Coast, can talk a little bit more, you know, locally. But fishermen nationally have reason to be concerned about Pebble Mine, because if we can't stop and save the world's largest salmon fishery, then what can we, you know? And this is an issue that has, as you say, mobilized individual businessmen to collaborate and to coordinate with each other and to agree on one issue. And so we started with fishermen in Bristol Bay who undoubtedly, by large percentages, you know, disagree with the Pebble Mine. And then we moved to the state of Alaska. Other fishermen see this as a threat because halibut and crab and other species use waters that flow from Bristol Bay into the Bering Sea, where the Deadliest Catch films it shows, see their fisheries possibly being contaminated. And then the state of Alaska has weighed in, and then we've moved to getting national support. And there are permit holders who own Bristol Bay permits hailing from 37 states around the country. And then you have people like Sarah who come in and fish or who work in the canneries, and we have crew members that come in, and we have businesses, you know, there in Massachusetts like Stavis Seafoods and John Nagel and Company who use and source Bristol Bay salmon for their businesses. So what we've done is we've been able to educate fishermen and industry as to the economic importance of Bristol Bay salmon nationally. And we've really gotten the attention of everybody when we, you know, when they realize that the natural resource that they depend on for their bottom line is at risk.
Mm. Sarah, do you want to add anything to that?
Sure. Well, I can speak a little bit about take it down to the New England level. I've done a little bit of digging in the Alaska permit database and come across in the last 35 years. 185 people in the states of Massachusetts, Maine, Vermont, and Rhode Island alone who have who own or previously owned a permit to fish commercially in Alaska. Now, that's not just Bristol Bay, but maybe a couple dozen of them are. So to me, that seems to indicate that there is a fairly significant economic connection between New England and Alaska fisheries. And of course, that number doesn't include New Englanders who crew on boats or people like me who work in the processing operations.
Yeah. And go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, so yeah, and I was also just going to mention that, you know, a lot of our really talented chefs in New England take quite a bit of pride in serving Bristol Bay salmon. Every transaction from that salmon, from the boats to the tenders, the processing operations, the distributors, the dealers, the restaurants, the supermarkets.
That long chain there.
That's, yeah, it is. It goes all over the world. It goes all over the U.S. Fillets, cans, et cetera. Value-added products like smoked salmon. At every step of the way, that's a dollar going in somebody's pocket.
And not only that, but from a consumer's point of view, I mean, think about how popular salmon is worldwide. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I won't eat farmed salmon.
Yeah, and sockeye salmon is really considered some of the best.
And I don't want to be in a position where there's no other option, you know, that it would be
Laura, are there examples in New England of fishing communities coming together as we're seeing the communities in Bristol Bay come together against mine? Are there other instances?
I think more and more. You know, when we started the festival 10 years ago, Gloucester and New Bedford, which are probably the best known and most important fishing ports in Massachusetts, really weren't working together very well. And more recently, with a lot of the regulations that have come into place, particularly Amendment 13, which came in 2010, those two communities actually joined in a lawsuit to try and reverse decisions that were made. And so, and also went down to Washington and were joined by recreational fishermen who had similar complaints. So I think more and more people are kind of putting aside their differences and looking at what's in common. And when we do have our festival every year, we have fishermen and fishing people from coastal communities everywhere. And I think, you know, anywhere you've got a waterfront, there are issues about maintaining access to people who use it in traditional ways for work.
Yeah.
You know, there are all kinds of things that fishermen have in common with each other, no matter where they come from and what they're fishing for.
Mm. Now, we've talked about marine spatial planning on this program recently, and this seems to be a perfect example of how planning out the use of marine ecosystems, including watersheds, could prevent a situation like this one, right? I mean, that's sort of a way we're kind of looking at. We do this zoning on land, but we haven't really thought so much about, and you know, that land interaction.
Potentially. I get a little bit nervous with marine spatial planning in the sense that I'm not sure, you know, they talk about all the stakeholders having a place at the table, but I'm not sure the power structure allows for people to have actually equal say or equal voice.
And, good point.
I also see us increasingly eager to industrialize our natural world, you know, so the idea that you would divide up the ocean so there's a place for fish farming offshore and there's a place for oil drilling offshore and, you know, oh yes, well, we can allow a little bit of room for people to harvest the natural wild resource if it hasn't already been destroyed by all these other uses. So I worry about it a bit.
We're talking about the salmon fisheries in Bristol Bay. We'll talk more after a quick break.